Hola, mi gente. The moment you've been waiting for is finally here. My brand new book, Financially Lit, is officially out. And I can't wait for you to get your copy. Inside this book, I'm bringing you culturally relevant and relatable personal finance advice that will allow you to finally feel seen, heard, and understood. Whether it's the guilt you feel from being the first person to make it while members of your family are still struggling, or the way that financial trauma manifests itself in negative and limiting beliefs around money, Financially Lit is here to guide you through it all. Just a few years ago, it was almost impossible to find personal finance books written for first-generation wealth-building Latinas. We have been forced to navigate the complicated world of money with a bunch of money books written by old white dudes who don't understand what it's like for us first-gen kids. But that stops right here, right now. Inside Financially Lit, you will learn how to set boundaries with your familia, with your dinero, create and pass on generational wealth, diversify and increase your income, protect yourself from financial abuse, navigate the complicated relationship between amor and dinero, invest like a white dude or better, and so much more. You can get your hard copy and audiobook version of Financially Lit at financiallylitbook.com, and make sure to join our email list so you can find out when I'm stopping in a city near you for the Financially Lit book tour. See you soon.
This podcast is brought to you by eHarmony, the dating app to find someone you can be yourself with. Why doesn't eHarmony allow copy and paste in first messages? Because you are unique, and your conversations should reflect that. eHarmony wants you to find someone who will get you. How are you going to know who gets you? If people send you the same generic conversation starters, they message everyone else. Conversations that actually help you get to know each other. Imagine that. Get who gets you on eHarmony. Sign up today.
There are ways to build wealth, to be successful in whatever that means to you, in ways where you're not sacrificing your values and you're still able to focus on the impact that you provide to the communities that you're a part of. One of the things that it's always important to me when I'm doing branding and I'm talking to marketing, it's not what are your core values. How do your core values look in action? A core value in community, ¿qué carajo es eso? Oh, I value diversity. Do you value diverse backgrounds? Do you value racial diversity? Do you want to make sure that diverse voices are always being heard? Turning your core values into action really gives you guiding principles for your business. And all these shortcut-driven marketing woo-woo tactics about building wealth in our business, number one, they are short-term. And secondly, they're not giving you the tools to build a thriving business.
Yeah, absolutely. I think having a business that you can be proud of definitely requires a level of integrity that you have to continuously come back to, because I think there's so many things that will tempt you out here in the world to just be like, no, I'm just going to try that, make a quick cash grab, blah, blah, blah. You're not going to feel good about that shit.
You're listening to Yo Quiero Dinero, a personal finance podcast for the modern Latina. I'm your host, Janice Torres, award-winning Latina personal finance expert. I didn't always have my financial shit together, but when I started looking for POC-friendly personal finance podcasts, I couldn't find any. And so Yo Quiero Dinero was born. On this show, I'll show you how to make dinero, how to keep your dinero, and most importantly, how to make it grow. Each week, I'm connecting you with the most brilliant minds in the world of money and business, so you can learn about investing, entrepreneurship, and building wealth. The best part? I'm dishing up all this knowledge with a sassy side of sazón. So if you're ready to be poderosa with your dinero, you've come to the right place. Let's dive in. Before we hop into today's conversation, I want to remind you to follow us on social. If you're loving this podcast and you want more community, you want to find out more about our events and all the stuff that we have going on behind the scenes, you can find us on Facebook, Twitter, TikTok, YouTube, Instagram, and everywhere else you love to hang out on the internet. If you're loving this podcast, please take a moment to leave us a review if you listen to us on Apple. It's the easiest way to share our podcast with people that you know and love, and it helps us get discovered by amazing listeners like you. So take a moment, leave us a review, share us with your friends and family, subscribe so that you never miss an episode, and make sure to check out our blog, YoQuieroDineroPodcast.com, where you can sign up for our email list and you'll never miss an episode. Plus, you get exclusive invitations to our live events, special discounts for our digital courses, and as always, our best personal finance tips and advice to help you be poderosa with your dinero. Thanks for listening. Now, let's get into the episode.
Hola, mi gente. Welcome back to another episode of Yo Quiero Dinero, the podcast. On today's show, we have an incredible Boricua who is going to be teaching us exactly what we need to be doing to really own our stories and market yourself as a business in an authentic way, because God knows we need more of that shit out there. There's so much bro marketing advice, toxic shit out there. We're not doing any of that. So without further ado, I'm going to let our special guest introduce herself. Paulette, welcome to the show.
Hola, thank you for having me. My name is Paulette Piñero. And before anything else, I am a recovering perfectionist.
Girl, same.
Recovering perfectionist first, you know, forever work in progress. And secondly, I am the founder and CEO of Unstoppable Latina. We're a multicultural marketing agency, and we help Latina entrepreneurs amplify their imperfect stories, center their businesses on impact, so they become unstoppable CEOs of their businesses. So I'm here to help jefas, like, not just elevate their brand, but elevate themselves, because that is the biggest aha when my clients is like, coño, like, I finally feel like the CEO of my business. I'm like, my work here is done.
That's the mark of success.
Yes. I love to working with jefas.
I love it. And we need more women like you who are doing the thing, like empowering us, because I think we have an epidemic of being unable to show up for ourselves, especially as like mujeres. There's a lot of narratives that we have to kind of unravel and throw away in the trash. I know for my own experience growing up as a first generation kid, we were taught like not to make noise. You know, we were taught not to be loud, not to brag, not to make people feel inferior, you know, by like what you're doing. And so I think that's what ends up stopping a lot of us from like really being able to own our stories and show up. Would you agree?
Oh, yes. I was raised with the calladita te ves más bonita, like constantly. Number one, undiagnosed ADHD, yo no me callaba la boca. So I get it a little bit. De mi abuela. She's like, pull it. Like, stop. But the second part, it was like, calladita te ves más bonita porque you should not be the, you should not let people know you're smart. You should not let people know you're, oh, sacaste, like, you're in the honor roll. Don't tell people that. Like, it wasn't just about saying what you know about or speaking up or advocating for others. It was also about this shame of your progress, your growth, your wins, your celebrations. Like, it was the calladita te ves más bonita for everything. And I was raised by powerful professional women.
And still you were getting that message.
And I still was getting that message. And sometimes I still get it from the abuelas. Not, you know, my mom has done a lot of work around that. But even from my family, like, my grandfather called me like 2 or 3 months ago, and I was leaving this amazing event with one of my clients. I was so happy that I put this event for them. And my grandfather was like, mija, te vi en la noticia. And I Googled you, and like, number one, tienes que rebajar.
Oh my God. Of course.
Of course. Like, you had to start. And number two, like, numero dos, like, tú eres muy revolucionaria. I'm like, papi, I am talking about empowering women entrepreneurs. Like, qué revolucionaria es eso? So it's not just about, you know, calladita te ves más bonita, that you shouldn't speak up in situations of injustice. It's also, you should not be proud of your accomplishments, of your wins. You should not step into your leadership. Is this dimming of the light that's constantly happening? And I just came from a call with a past client, and she was like, where did you build that, this confidence? And I'm like, I didn't build it. This is years of therapy, number one. And secondly, which is something that I connect with your content a lot, is no one's coming to save us.
Big facts.
Nadie. No one's coming. Not a man, not your parents, not your family, not your therapist, not your coach. Nadie. No one's. If you are passionate about what to do and your purpose, number one, like, you have to move and you have to do things. People will join you once you're moving.
Mm-hmm. But you got to tell them what you're doing, right? And that's the center of what we're going to have on this conversation. So I want to know, let's go back in time. Before you were your own jefa killing it in the marketing world, what were you doing?
I was a burned out nonprofit professional.
Just kind of through your career trajectory. And what was that moment for you that you're just like, I got to do some other shit because this ain't it.
This ain't it. I was part of the nonprofit industrial complex. For all my nonprofit jefas, you know what I'm talking about. And I was the only Latina in senior leadership for a long time. Not only that, I was younger than a lot of the folks in senior level positions. I was the only mom because it was all white women.
Well, you know, let's acknowledge the privilege that it is for to even be able to afford working in the nonprofit industry. I think that's a lot what a lot of people don't realize. Many folks are drawn to the industry because they want to help, but they don't realize like how much sacrifice is going to be required from an economic standpoint in order to like, quote unquote, be able to help. But that's neither here nor there.
It's part of the calladita te ves más bonita, that you can only help your communities if you sacrifice yourself. What I learned is that I could help my community. Like, the best way to help my communities is to make money, number one. And second, you can help your community in a corporate space. You don't have to, because nonprofits require this, many nonprofits, right, require the sacrifice of the employee to support the stakeholder. So they perpetuate the oppression that they say that they're looking to save.
That's a whole word.
I remember I was a union steward and with one of my employers. I was in a senior position and a union steward, and I had to negotiate salary for our union members that did not have food. But this part of the services that we provided was providing emergency food for elders. Our staff did not have food. Our case managers did not have food. And we were helping older adults get benefits and food. So, but for me, the moment was, I remember I was taking the commuter rail to Boston to go to work. I was exhausted. I was burned out. My manager was leaving. Like, my one advocate in executive leadership was leaving. She was my mentor. And I was just like, there's nothing, like, I've done it all. I've done the mentorship, I sponsorship. I don't want to be the executive director. I don't want to be whining and dining white people to give me money. That's not where I want to go. So I reached my peak of the responsibility and position and salary that I will ever get. The only mobility is to go to another organization, experience the same for $5,000-$10,000 more. And am I really making the change that I want to make in my, like, the impact that I want to make in my communities, when I'm only working with one organization that is unwilling to change? And I started crying on the train, on the commuter train. And I actually took a photo. It was in 2019. I took a photo as I was walking to my office. And I still have that photo, and I put it every year. And I was like, I need to look at myself, because this cannot be it. This cannot be my life. So I took that photo, I looked at myself, and I looked so miserable. Going to my perfect on resume job in downtown Boston next to the financial district, overlooking the Boston Tea Party, which I hated. They would throw the tea like five times, and I'm like, ¿y Puerto Rico qué? But on paper, it looked like everything that I ever wanted. And I was miserable. That was that moment where I was like, I have to try something else. And I was not born or made to be an employee, because this will never make sense for me.
I love the fact that you mentioned that, because it's completely against the narrative that we are taught as first generation children. And how would you define yourself? Because you were actually born in Puerto Rico and you moved to the States. How old were you?
I moved 11 years ago. So I was 26.
Okay. So did you start your nonprofit career in Puerto Rico?
Yeah, I started my nonprofit career at age 12, but employed at age. I started a nonprofit with my abuela. I was in nonprofit boards as a teenager. And I started my nonprofit career working with a nonprofit in Puerto Rico called Community Press, Prensa Comunitaria, at 18. And I was producing radio and TV and working and training communities with them. So I'm 15, 16 years of a career in nonprofits.
And then what prompted you to move to the States?
My son. We had been advocating for Alexander to receive special education services in Puerto Rico for 2 years. And one of the special ed teachers looked at us and said, Mami, tú tienes que entender, like, autistic kids like Alex, they'll stay nonverbal. Like, this is it. Like, get over it. And I was like, bitch, you got the wrong one. In a month, my husband and I sold everything and moved, the two of us, our one-year-old, just turned one-year-old daughter, and Alex was in kindergarten, to a one-bedroom in Boston to fully hustle. And I continued my nonprofit career. I was very blessed that I didn't have to go back. I was able to continue like my growth trajectory and the climbing the ladder that I think was the biggest mistake. I started my nonprofit career in Puerto Rico.
I think, you know, when I hear stories like this, it's always just a reminder of like the inner resilience I think that we have as a people, right? Like, I don't think a lot of folks, especially ones that have been like rooted in a specific place for a while, can imagine what it is to just pick up everything and like start over in the way that is such a hallmark of our community as Latinos, right? And like, even though as Puerto Ricans, we're not born immigrants, like the experience of moving from the island to the States is very much an immigrant experience, right? It's just like, you got to learn the language, you got to understand the systems, you have to navigate this whole different way of life that it is here.
Es como una cosa de loco. Like, I was like, where am I? What is happening? I've worked my whole life. How is it that I just cannot navigate this? I will never forget that water cooler talk about March Madness, and that everyone was talking about it. Everyone was rooting for it. That's what everyone was talking about. And I was like, ¿qué carajo es esto? Why are they so like, yo voy para la justa a beber en Puerto Rico. Like, that's all I do. Like, what is happening? Is this like a fiesta de la calle? Like, why are you all excited about this? Just feeling like, oh my God, I will not, like, how am I going to connect with them if I just don't, like, not even going to college? Like, I think it's a privilege if you went to college in the US, right? Because you're part of this community and this culture that I never had access to, never understood. I, like, March, I didn't speak with anyone. Like, those small things are part of equity and inclusiveness in the workplace. I felt so lost. I could see the growth trajectory of even other folks of color that didn't have that similar experience, that were able to connect with the executives that also have, like, the experience and pedigree and the resume, right? But there were things that I could never relate to or connect to with executives of life experiences. So we might not have parts of the immigrant experience that we can connect to with other folks, but the feelings, the lack of opportunity, the lack of connection, navigating the corporate space, those are things that we can definitely relate to with other immigrant communities.
Yeah, it's so true. I'll never forget when I entered college and I finally was confronted with the fact that my education was not at the same level as peers. When I realized like, oh, these kids were like taking advanced mathematics classes and shit. And I was here struggling with like algebra in high school, right? And so when you are confronted with the disparities so directly in your face, and you find yourself in environments where you don't even have a reference point of like where you should be or like someone you can relate to because you are the first person to go to college or the first person to work in corporate and just like navigating all these systems, that shit can feel hella isolating, hella overwhelming. And I think that's why folks like you and I have realized like, I'm probably better off opting out of this shit and just like going creating my own ecosystem where I can create that feeling of community and just visibility that I did not experience in my corporate career or in my post high school career as well.
I never felt like I could fit in the nonprofit or corporate space. It was never, I could not understand how, well, we're one impact, but up to here.
And we're all going to be poor to create that impact because there's somehow not enough to go around.
And also the part of, I just couldn't do the code switching anymore. I just couldn't. And I don't shame people that have to do it because of survival. I always say, never take your full self to work. They don't deserve that shit. They don't deserve your full self. give them 20%, give them 30, never give them 100. But it was also that I was hiding so many other parts of myself. Even though I was doing diversity, equity, and inclusion, I could not fully share that I was a queer woman. Right? Because you're married to a man. Like, right? Like, yeah, bisexual success. Like, there were so many facets of me that I could not bring. And I'm not talking about being my full self. I am talking about just being me, right? Being neurodivergent. The moment that I started advocating for those reasonable accommodations, for that small understanding, I was a problem. And I was like, I can't. I was not born for this space. This is not what I want to do. And I am talented, smart, resourceful, kind, collaborative enough to do this shit on my own. If they're not willing to accept my magic, then I will monetize it myself.
I love it. Okay. So let's talk about how you decide to go off and venture on your own. First of all, how did you identify the skill sets that you had in order to actually be able to create a business, right? Because that's one of the first things that we need to think about. Like, what am I good at and what are people going to pay for? So how did that journey evolve for you?
So I had always done a lot of like smaller consultings for nonprofit boards. I always had side hustles. My husband is a graphic designer. We always had side hustles doing design, working with entrepreneurs. And I did more of the project management and creative direction. And my husband did a lot of the execution. We had businesses in Puerto Rico. And it was more consulting, right? Marketing consulting. But I was a social worker. I'm not the creative. I love project management. So the first thing I did was identify my zone of genius. Like, what are the two or three things that I do better than most because of my education, my skills, my expertise, my culture, my beliefs, my purpose, my calling. And I wrote them down. And then I started getting like more specific, right? Like, but with whom? And I still do this exercise in coaching. I wrote it down. I had like a Google document and I was like, okay, this is where I feel. And then I was like, what are the things that I could offer? I've already in the past done board training and education. I do strategic planning. I always say, don't start with your resume because your resume keeps you in your zone of excellence, which are the things that you do well, but you don't enjoy. There's three questions that I always ask my clients. And I ask myself these questions in different phases of starting my business. But the first one is, what would you do for free if money was no object? I will always say librarian. But I was able to pull things from there, right? Which is about sharing resources. I really enjoy finding the right resource for your needs. So what would you do for free if money was no object? Secondly, if I were to pay you $1 million for you to speak about one topic for an hour and you only had 5 minutes to prepare, what would you talk about? And I've had people that are like engineers and like, oh, I would talk about wealth building. I would talk about, you know, buying an Airbnb. I would talk about finding the right mentor. Has nothing to do with their resume. And then the third question is, if you were able to choose, who would be in the audience? Because that tells you, who are you most excited to share this knowledge and expertise? And I kind of did those exercises myself when I was like, who do I want to work with? But now I found that those three questions are really guiding principles to identify, to get close to your zone of genius. So I did a list of like, here are the things that I have done as side hustles. Here are the things that I've done in careers. And then which ones excite me and who they excite me to do. And I always ended with, I want to work with my communities. I want to create a space for mi gente, for my people, for my communities, for my different intersections, to not just grow and be empowered and share your story, but also to create a safe space for us to mess up around diversity, equity, and inclusion topics and be open to receive information. So I'm a multicultural marketing consultant, but I'm anti-racist business strategist. So having the conversations when I am doing a brand elevation and I'm like, let's talk about your ideal client. And it's like, oh, well, this and that. But they're not, and I've had folks that are like, but they're Latinas, but like, I might work with the Black community. I'm like, well, part of the Black community is also part of the Latino community. Let's unpack that. You know, where these perceptions came from. Like, a lot of business coaches don't have those conversations. When we're talking about, well, I'm focusing on scale and scale and scale. Okay, then let's take a pause. How is scalability going to affect your community? So let's talk about the community impact. Let's talk about then what are your commitments to your communities? They're like, oh, pero yo no quiero cobrar caro, right? Like, but I want to help everyone. Okay, so premium pricing, it's actually going to allow you to serve more people. What are other ways that we can serve communities for free or pro bono? So maybe you have one or two community partners where you do pro bono work. Maybe you start writing this blog and then call Janessa and monetize it, right? But you're starting this blog because you can give free access to your expertise or at a lower cost to your expertise without giving away your superpoderes, without giving away your services. So making sure, and that's something that I wanted to do for my business. That's really what in my career was like, someone promised something to a funder. We don't know how to do it, but we got the money. Poler, can you fix it? So my expertise in the nonprofit space was business development. And I wanted to bring that and the equity and the purpose and impact piece to my clients. I remember my first core mentor was like, this is not going to make you money. But I wanted to make sure that I was doing it with my community because we have this commitment to amplifying and empowering and supporting our gente, but it cannot continue to be about sacrificing yourself all the time to do it. Liberation is not equated to your full sacrifice of your life. It's not. We got to start liberation with ourselves to be able to do it within our own communities.
That is so true. It's always just the concept of like, you cannot pour from an empty cup. And you really, I think it's a, you have to have some level of integrity to feel good about the business that you're operating, right? Like if you're just like out here for a cash grab, that at some point is going to feel like so fucking hollow, unless you're just completely like, you know, dissociated from society and a sociopath. But for the most part, I think when we think about entrepreneurship and building a business, like you want to feel like you are making income and impact, because one without the other is kind of like meaningless. And I love the questions that you went over as far as like identifying your secret sauce. I like also thinking about like, what is the legacy that you want to leave after you're gone? Right? Because I think a lot of us don't even think that far ahead, but you can absolutely get very like meta with that thought. And I think it can be like a guiding light. So let's talk about marketing, right? Because we've had like offline conversations, and I know we've both been observing a lot of like the shit that goes on, especially in this online business coaching world. And I think the most disheartening thing for me has been watching people who I really honestly genuinely feel like they had good intentions in the beginning, but then they get caught up in the bro marketing, the scaling at any cost, the exploitative, whatever the word is, pricing, just like shit that becomes very questionable. And I think some people think that in order to become successful, whatever you define that as, you have to adopt that mindset and that you can't actually...
That's the only way, yeah.
Yeah, that's the only way, and that you can't actually have a successful like six-figure business, multiple six-figure business, etc., without just saying, fuck it, whatever comes with that. What's your response to that?
I'm tired of it. They all say the same. I want to be very candid. It's like bro marketing is not just... you know, 25-year-old white men. Bro marketing is, you know, white supremacy can continue to exist when the marginalized communities are the ones promoting it and elevating it. Like, that is how white supremacy thrives. White supremacy thrives when the marginalized communities that are mostly oppressed upheld white supremacy values. Because I can promise that todo el mundo that's listening to this podcast can relate to, like, one of the people that hurt me the most was another Latina, right? Like, it was another woman of color. And I thought, right, because white supremacy thrives when marginalized, I'm going to say it three times, when marginalized communities upheld it. It, bro, marketing is, it's not just about, it's not like the 25-year-old YouTuber that is going to tell you how to make 1 million in 30 days, right? It's also about this belief that the only way that you are successful is by achieving this imaginary person's definition of success. And like you were saying, like, what I always ask, like, oh, I want to be a six-figure, a multi-six-figure, like a seven-figure. But why? Like, asking yourself like five times, like when you think about your definition of success, like what does success mean to you, or what are your strategic growth goals, right? Like, ask yourself five times why and what does this give you? And I'm going to promise you at the end, it's like freedom, peace of mind, right? It is a, it's a core value. The way that marketing, right? And I teach people, like, your branding, their branding brings people in, right? It connects with the hearts of people. Your marketing pushes people to take action. So things to do. I hate that bro marketing and traditional marketing right now, it's about people doing something, right? The push. And there's only like three ways to do it. You can only scale with memberships, but they won't get access to you. You can only scale with memberships where they don't get access to you. I know a lot of people that hate that. I have chronic illnesses. I can't be sharing my knowledge with hundreds of people. That's too much. Si no me puedo levantar esa mañana, right? Like, you can't. And I'm not saying any of these business models are wrong. Is that we're only shown like three opportunities, right? The second one is the agency model, but you are required to find marginalized communities that you pay them a minimum compared to the market rate. So you are perpetuating oppression so you can provide quick solutions to your clients. So you have to sacrifice the equity piece. I have an agency. I will never sacrifice the equity piece, right? And then is taking the coach of coach of coaches that coach.
Oh, yes. The only business they've ever had is a coaching business.
The coaches, coaches of coaches. I am not saying that any of these business models are incorrect. What I'm saying is that none of them are business models. And that is one of the big barriers that I see with a lot of Latina entrepreneurs, that we have to build our business foundations knowledge first, right? Like, what is your business model? Well, I'm a coach. That is not a business model. So like understanding what is your business model. And then understanding your revenue streams. Most of the marketing content is not teaching you the basics of understanding business, because when this bullshit comes out with these content creators that are just throwing out tactics but are not giving you strategy and actionable steps, the one missing link is business foundation knowledge. So that's what I try to do with my content. Most of my content is on LinkedIn. I share content on Instagram and TikTok too, but that is my content, aims to educate and give you the starting point for you to continue to learn, for you to follow other creators, right? Like, you want to learn about passive income before you open the Etsy, before you make $100,000 with your Canva downloadable, go to Jeunesse, right? Vea, ponte a escuchar Yo Quiero Dinero podcast. Sign up for her class, sign up for her courses, because she's going to walk you through every step. She's going to teach you like the concepts, the terminology, the systems, the tools, build the strategy, right? So you understand how these business models can allow you to grow your income and create revenue and build wealth. Most of the marketing advice is just vomiting tactics without proof, without strategy, without really teaching folks the business foundations of what they need. One of my strategic priorities for this year, I'm going to start teaching every month. What does that look like? It can be a live, it can be a workshop, it can be a mastermind. But I am just tired of a lot of content creators just vomiting things, tactics that you should do without giving you like strong sense. But this is their tactic because you're always going to follow back and go back to their page. You're never going to learn anything because they are holding the information for a few and none of them are in their coaching program.
That's so fucking true. I think a prime example of what you're talking about right now is this new trend of faceless marketing, where there's this shit ton of these faceless marketing accounts that are opening up. And it's basically a multi-level marketing scheme, y'all. So for anybody who hasn't seen this stuff on the internet, I'm like, I don't know what rock you've been living under, because it's like the algorithm has latched onto me and just constant bullshit. But essentially, it's a concept, a scam, where someone is promoting a course that teaches you how to create a faceless marketing account, right? Because they're exploiting this fear that a lot of people have about like showing up online. So it's like, hey, I'm taking that out of the equation. You can go ahead and make $1 million by buying this course, learning how to do this, and then you have what's called master resale rights, where you can essentially sell 100% of the intellectual property in this course for profit. When I first saw it, I was just like, what kind of fuckery is this? There's so many things that's wrong with it, but I think the most important aspect of it for me was like, just using common sense. How many times have you as a person randomly handed a stranger on the street $500 for something when you have no relationship with them? Like they just approach you on the street. And you're just like, oh yeah, here's $500. This is essentially what this is, you know, asking people to do. It's like, you're going to create an account. Nobody knows who you are. You don't have an established relationship with these people. And somehow you're going to convert them into customers without having built community, without having built trust, without having any foundation of a relationship. Like that shit is, it just doesn't fucking happen.
It doesn't happen. It does not make sense. But this is what then requires, like, this is why I talk about anti-racism and liberation so connected to marketing and business strategy, right? Because when you are not achieving the goal that was never achievable, I see coaches do this too, right? We've talked about this, right? Like coaching cults and all that. When you are unable to then achieve what they told you you would achieve if you follow the one roadmap. Because that's the other thing. There's only one roadmap. I did it. And this is the only way to do it. It's not teaching you what you can do. It's like, this is the only way to do it. When you cannot achieve it, you're going to feel like shit. And secondly, you're going to take shortcuts that if it wasn't for that course, if it wasn't for that mastermind, if it wasn't for that content creator, you would have never taken. And then you start taking shortcuts and sacrificing your values because, but I have to do it because they told me in the course that this was the only way to do it.
That's giving cult leader.
It is giving cult leader, where they're like, I am the only one that knows the solution. You have to follow the solution. If you don't follow my solution, then that means that you're not committed to the program. But here's another opportunity. Now you can sell this program.
Yeah.
Yeah. To other people.
That's another thing too, right? Because just like not having any ownership or creation of what you're selling, like that to me is also just like, how can you be excited about selling some shit that you have no skin in? Like that you don't even create this shit. You know what I mean? It's just like, it's so fucking weird to me.
But also, what is your commitment to a product that you don't know if it works, right? Like here is why, where you start sacrificing your values. Because those programs are not teaching you to do your due diligence with like the Amazon affiliate marketing products that you're going to be promoting on this imaginary Pinterest and this Instagram, faceless Instagram. Have you tried the products? What is your commitment to the company that makes products? So we cannot be on one side saying we are against child labor. We are against the exploitation of communities of color. But hey, let me make a faceless Instagram and promote all these products through affiliate marketing that I have no commitment to. I do not care about the impact of the products or the companies that make them because my only focus is to follow this imaginary guru that told me that this is the only way to build wealth. And it's like building wealth a lo que se joda. And that's not something that I subscribe to. There are ways to build wealth, to be successful in whatever that means to you, in ways where you're not sacrificing your values and you're still able to focus on the impact that you provide to the communities that you're a part of. And not just Latinos, right? Like, you identify as queer, if you identify as disabled, like all those other ways. And you don't need a nonprofit to do it. But one of the things that it's always important to me when I'm doing branding and I'm talking to marketing, like, what are your core values? How do your core values look in action? A core value in community, ¿qué carajo es eso, right? My core value, community, no. We commit to prioritizing employment in our communities, right? Oh, I value diversity. ¿Qué es eso? Do you value diverse backgrounds so you can have creative ideas? Do you value racial diversity? Do you want to make sure that diverse voices are always being heard? Like, turning your core values into action really gives you guiding principles for your business. And all these short-term, shortcut-driven marketing woo-woo tactics about building wealth in our business, number one, they are short-term. And secondly, they're not giving you the tools to build a thriving business. This is a tactic. This is, right? But build a thriving business. And I'm not saying full-time entrepreneurship, you offer services or a consultant, right? Like, monetizing a blog is built. It's number one, is a business model, but is a thriving business model that you can continue while you still do something that is fun and exciting for you.
Yeah, absolutely. I think having a business that you can be proud of definitely requires a level of integrity that you have to continuously come back to, because I think there's so many things that will tempt you out here in the world to just be like, no, I'm just going to try that, make a quick cash grab, blah, blah, blah. But you're just, like I said, you're not going to feel good about that shit. So let's go into the topic of owning your story, right? Because as a founder, you have to get very clear on the origin story, why you do what you do, what you accomplish with the work that you do, what you hope to accomplish, and who do you help. So what do you think are some tactics that people can use to, like, really effectively communicate those messages in a way that's actually going to help you convert leads in order to, you know, actually make money in your business?
When it comes to your finances, you think you've done it all. You've saved, you've researched, and you've invested all that you can. Now it's time to take those investments to the next level by using the brand behind every great investor, Yahoo Finance. As America's number one finance destination, Yahoo Finance has everything you need, whether you're a seasoned trader or just dipping your toes into the market. Join the millions of investors who trust Yahoo Finance to guide them on their financial journey. For comprehensive financial news and analysis, visit yahoofinance.com, the number one financial destination, yahoofinance.com.
Fast forward to the end of 2024. Think about your goals. What can you do right now to give yourself the best chance of succeeding? If you want to learn a new language, you should absolutely get Babbel. You don't need to pay hundreds of dollars to private tutors or waste hours on apps that really don't help you speak the language. Babbel's quick 10-minute lessons are handcrafted by over 200 language experts to help you start speaking a new language in as little as 3 weeks. Just like the information that we share here on Yo Quiero Dinero, Babbel's tips and tools are approachable, rooted in real-life situations, and delivered with conversation-based teaching so that you're ready to practice what you've learned in the real world. Babbel's convenient courses have helped me learn real-life French conversational skills. I was so intimidated by the French language the first time that I visited Paris, but with Babbel's help, I learned how to order food, ask for directions, all without having to consult a random language app while I'm on vacation. Here's a special limited-time deal for our listeners. Right now, get 50% off a one-time payment for a lifetime Babbel subscription, but only for our listeners at babbel.com/dinero. Get 50% off at babbel.com/dinero, spelled babbel.com/dinero. Rules and restrictions may apply.
One of the exercises that I love to do to write a compelling story is doing a story, I call it like your life map. And it's where you write a line, and I let my clients be as creative as possible. I've had signs, cartulinas, like glitter, and you write from the moment that you were born to this moment, what are pivotal moments in your life that taught you the most, require you to pivot, or created the biggest change in your life, and start writing them down. And then you go up with the things that were good and you go down with the things that were not that good, right? It helps show your trajectory. It also helps with that finding your like secret sauce, like finding your superpoder, helps you with finding your superpoder that you can build a business around it. But secondly, it tells you, you start seeing kind of like, what are the trends around your life? Like, what are the things that when things went down, what went up before or what went up after? Because you start seeing like, I see this a lot with my Latina clients. Oh my God, every time something bad happened, I went back to school. This is why I have 3 doctorate degrees and so much through that. Because we were told, you know, oh, el trabajo te vota, like go back to school, go back to school. But you start seeing also how you react individually to trauma, how you start reacting to difficult times around your life from a child into adulthood. So after you do that exercise and I start identifying like, oh, this is the way that I react. How do I want to react moving forward? That helps you when you're telling your origin story. It helps you tell, like, I always say, select no more than 3. Like, what were 3 pivotal moments in your life that took you to make the decision that you wanted something different?
What did you do to get there, right?
Yeah. And what are you doing to move forward? The best content is the content that shows people what's possible. You cannot just connect with the end result. You have to connect with the things that were not that great. When I talk about my journey, and a lot of people tell me like, mija, tú lo dices todo. And I'm like, girl, I'm giving you 5% of my journey. But there's 3 different things, right? Like my first business was when I was 11. I had a car wash before abuelo got home from work, because if not, I would get in trouble. Porque estaba gastando el agua. And that was my first business. And I had it for years. Every Friday from 3 to 5, I was washing cars for everyone in Bumbor and Ponce. As my first business. The second time, it was that day in 2019 when I decided no one is saving you. You have to do something different. You were not born for this. And then the third part of my story is surviving long COVID. When I was in that hospital, March 17th, I was told, you're not going to make it. You have to call your family and say goodbye at that hospital. And I realized that I have given my life to my children, to my mom, to my familia. And even though the resume looked good, I had never done anything for myself. And I decided moving forward that I was going to do things for myself first and then everyone else. As a mommy who became a mom at 20 of a child with disabilities, it was very hard. But those 3 pivotal moments got me to where I was ready to have the business that I deserved. So when you look at your origins, you identify 2 to 3 pivotal moments. Do that exercise of the life map. Identify 3 pivotal moments that took you to where you are, and then start sharing what was the transformation. The best content is not when your client is ready. The best content is when your client is 1 or 2 steps before they're ready to work with you. The best content shows people what is possible when you make the decision to move forward. When you make the decision, you want something different. That is sharing your imperfect and authentic story.
I love that exercise.
That is connecting with people. That is sharing parts of your story that you're willing to share and you feel comfortable with, where you can do face-ish content, right? Because it's yours and no one can take it away. But it really kind of like sets the tone of how you want to show up for folks and why your story is it's important to be told. It really shifts people like, coño, like I should share this. Oh, I did this.
Yeah.
I'm that girl. I gotta go bed out there. I have to.
And I think it helps you realize like how much shit you've actually accomplished, right? Like for me, I think those three moments are definitely getting laid off for the first time and only time ever in my corporate career. That was like the wake up call that I'm like, oh, hell no, I'm never going to let these jobs have control over me financially because ain't nobody got time. I think the second one for me was buying a house and realizing, oh shit, I actually did this because I was programmed to believe that this is the only way to build wealth. And I actually fucking hate this. And it's made me start questioning everything about what I've been told about success, adulting, all that shit. I think the third for me is recent. It's getting divorced and realizing how important it is for women, people who are in relationships, like to protect yourself financially, because God knows my story could have been so different if I had not had the prenup and all that stuff. So it's just like, it's constantly reinforced to me this overarching theme of the work that I do now, which is like helping women and people of color achieve financial independence, because we are tired of dealing with toxic jobs, toxic relationships, toxic environments. And when you got money, you got options. And that's kind of like the ethos that I, you know, use to guide everything that I do in the world.
And because you deserve it, because I am in a happy relationship. We it's going to be 14 years together.
Congrats.
I always forget. 1 month I celebrated like a month before. And he was like, what are we doing today? And a happy, thriving relationship. And I was seeing your content and I was listening to our podcast. And I'm like, Hafeh, like I'm separating my accounts. Sorry, it's happening. Because you are worth it by existing. By simply existing, you are worthy of your definition of success. You're worthy of building wealth for yourself and whatever it means, generational wealth for you, right? No one needs to define that for you, whatever that means. And third, that is liberation. Liberation is about, that is what equity is about, is that everyone has what they need to thrive and succeed. And what I need to thrive and succeed is very different from what my husband needs to thrive and succeed. So we should both have autonomy around our wealth building and success to do what we need to do and what that means for us. And what it means for him doesn't need to be what it means for me. So baby, vamos a separar la cuenta. We're separating all of our finances. And that's what I want for people. When I talk about women creating impact on their own terms without sacrificing themselves or their values, that you have a business that you enjoy, that makes you a shit ton of money, but that you can disconnect and go on vacation and not work 20 hours. Si lo que tú quieres, take your kids to a recital, go ahead and do it. But if you, what you want is to be traveling the world and sipping margaritas and have a babysitter, también.
Hell yeah. We're here for it. And it's up to you to define that. One of the things that I love that you talk about is being or becoming the CEO of your business, right? I think people, when they think CEO, they're like Fortune 500 company, you know, $100 million, fucking market capitalization, blah, blah. But the truth is that even if you are a person who is a solopreneur, you are a CEO. And so what does that actually mean to show up as a CEO in your business?
So I want to define first what the responsibilities of a CEO are. And they're not that complicated, which is why we have so many stupid white men doing it. No,
I fucking love you so much.
Number one, a CEO is responsible for setting the vision of the company. What is the ideal future where in a world where a company exists? So number one, the first responsibility is to set an inspiring vision. The second responsibility is creating the roadmap to achieve that vision, which is a strategy. What are the things that we have to do to get to that ideal world that we envision? And third is inspiring others to take action, whether that is your clients, your stakeholders, your employees, your contract, anyone, inspiring others to take action to that vision. So those are the three key responsibilities of being a CEO. Tú me vas a decir a mí that you're not the CEO of your small business when you're doing it all. It really helps shift when you have clarity of what it means to be a CEO, which is those three things. And then you look at your business. If you're running your business as an employee of someone else, and I've done it too, and I'm like, wait, I'm my own boss. What are you doing, Paulette? If we cannot run our businesses as we are employees of this imaginary person or your clients, right? When you go into with your employer, they were your partner. It was a collaboration. You do work, you get compensated. You should. With your clients is the same experience. It is a collaboration. You are co-creating something together, whether you sell them a product or sell a service or a digital service, you are going into a collaboration. You are sharing your expertise, your knowledge, your passion, your mission, your vision, your values. And the consumer and the client is committed to that, has alignment with that, and is willing to pay you money to get access to that information or that product. So this is a partnership and a collaboration. If you don't use the right language to talk about what you do, if you don't decide to be a CEO, you're always going to be focusing on executing, but you're going to forget your vision. You're not going to be building a strategy to achieve the vision, and you're not going to inspire others to go and achieve this vision with you, whether that is collaborators, partners, employees, and clients. So the importance of seeing yourself and harnessing that you are the CEO of your business is that you keep yourself accountable to a different standard that is not just about executing and vomiting information.
Yeah, I think that's so powerful because, you know, I think as women of color, again, we go back to this idea of not wanting to ask for help. And I know the thing that elevated me from exhausted, burnt out side hustler to now running a multiple six-figure business is outsourcing. You know, I first started with software. I was like, you know what? I'm spending way too much time going back and forth with people, trying to book them on a show, trying to figure out schedules. So I went and found a tool, Calendly. And I'm like, let me use this shit. I'll give them a link. They can figure out what time they're available. I'll set up my parameters and thing. Took out hours of bullshit administrative tasks of work that I could then focus on. Let me show up as a better podcaster. Let me show up as a better editor. Let me show up better just in general, because now I have this capacity to maybe accept more paid work because I'm not burnt out all the time, right? So just being able to focus in on those high return on investment activities that are bringing money into your business. Like if you're not focusing on that shit as a CEO, you're doing it wrong.
Yeah. If you're not building, I tell people like, if you don't have a strategy, and that doesn't need to look like a 10-page strategic plan, actually have a template, which is a one-page, you know, action plan for the year. If you are not spending time on building the strategy and building the roadmap, if you're not inspiring others to take action, if you're not looking at your vision and making sure that still makes sense, this is what happens. You only follow the money, and then you're working with clients that you hate. And then you're no longer enjoying your business. Then you're no longer enjoying what you're doing. So by some way, I trabajar para otro, right? Like I would rather work with someone and get health insurance without having to go to the connector.
Right.
Fine. Fácil.
Exactly.
Right? You have to spend time as the CEO of your business. One of the exercises that I recommend your listeners to do is if you have a business, whether you have employees, contractors, or your best friend is your dog and you run it from the corner of your closet, write your organizational chart. Your name will be in all of them. It's like CEO, CFO, intern, marketing intern. Like, escribelo completo. Like, write the whole thing of like how your business runs right now and include the aspirations that you have in the next year or two. And put names like, this is the role. It's me. It's me. It's me. It's me. Then start identifying what are the things that you can outsource. A lot of them will be tools. It will be a good CRM with great automations. It will be, you know, a scheduling link, or it would be a bookkeeping system. Like, oh, I can do $20 a month for QuickBooks, right? Whatever that means, you start outsourcing parts of your organizational chart. Others, it might be, I might not be ready to invest $10,000 in new branding or a new website. But I can start with a landing page. Let me find someone on Fiverr. Let me pay $500. Like you start delegating smaller pieces. So you have time to be the CEO of your business and you're investing in areas that in the long term are going to be positions, whether employees or contractors or partnerships and collaborations. But you cannot delegate. You cannot make these investments if you cannot see it and understand what are the responsibilities. And that is also setting the strategy for your business. I tell my clients, like, you might not feel that you're a CEO, pero vete a LinkedIn, change your business cards and like founder and CEO, and then everything else that you do.
So Paulette, I want to know, what one piece of advice would you give to somebody who is struggling to connect with an audience, who is struggling to own their story?
understand who your real audience is. Your audience is not company. Your audience is not a group of people. Sit down and write, like old school when you were doing your business plan or Googling to do a business plan and you ignored it. Sit down and write your audience profile. And don't stop at the demographics. Like, it's a 35-year-old Latina. She's a mom. She earns this, right? Like, yes, write the demographics. After you do that, sit down and write the psychographics. What are the behaviors that they have to take action? So where do they get their information? What is their role in the decision making? You know, do their friends send your profile and your content, or are they seeking your content? Like all the things that describe this person, not just demographics, but behaviors. Like, what are the behaviors that they have? Like, sometimes we're like, oh, my clients are corporations. No, mija. Like, your clients are not corporation. Is it the executive, like the CEO? Is it the HR director? Like, your client is the person who's paying your check, like the signing the check. The same thing with your business following and when you're attracting folks. There is a difference between your client and your end user. Your client is the person that pays. Your end user is the person that receives the benefit. In most situations, it's both, right? They're the same person. But write down like what they behave, what they like, what is the role in the decision-making process? Like, what are the things that they like? What are the things that they connect with? And then once you have that, give them a name. Go on pexels.com, go to Unsplash and find a photo of this person, right? Like, mine is Diana. Find a person of your Diana and what they're doing before they access your content. So I have a photo of Diana with, they are doing homework with their kids. They're cooking on a laptop and on their phone. That really helps you identify the capacity to access your content and your marketing and your sales strategy, right? Like, it's like, oh, yeah, well, the boy, she doesn't have time. They want to save it. They're not ready to scroll through, but they want to save it. They want to come back to it. They want to learn more. They want to have access. So take a photo of your Diana and what your audience is doing, that person is doing right before they get access to you, print it, and put it on your desk. And when you're creating content, look at that of your Diana and create content just for them. Speak the way that she wants to be spoken like. Connect exactly with her, not just pain points, but the stories that she's craving. So my brand is like, I'm your business best friend. I'm your business mejor amiga. It's like you're talking to your amiga on the group chat. It's like, ya no puedo más. Like, what should I do? Can you help me? I speak directly to Diana. You will attract la periferia, like everyone around Diana. But at the end of the day, we want to connect us with Diana. So that is the best way. And that is going to help you, like, put the camera on your face because you're speaking to her. And I'm like, Diana needs this right now. She needs it. It's going to help you show your face. It's going to help you understand your brand voice. But it's going to help you be more confident because you're not creating content for thousands of people. You're creating content for that one person that really needs you right now. And you are the one of the few people that can not just connect with her, but that has shared stories, that had shared cultural connections, that has shared challenges that no one else can understand. So you're like, she needs this and I'm going to do it. It's going to be my story.
Yeah, I love that. And I think having that level of clarity about who you're talking to really takes out the burnout and like the overwhelm that can come from even trying to figure out a content marketing plan, right? Like, I can come up with content within like 5 to 15 seconds at this point, because I just already know who exactly I'm talking to. And it doesn't have to be like this excruciating exercise where I'm just like fucking killing myself trying to figure out like, what do I need to say? Who do I need to talk to? That level of clarity comes from knowing exactly like who is following you and why. And what they need help with. So love that advice. As you guys can tell by listening to this episode, like, Paulette is just full of fucking gems. And I could keep her on this show for like 17 hours and you still wouldn't get all the goodness that she has. So Paulette, tell us, where can we find you? How can clients work with you? Tell us all the things, please.
Yeah. So part of what we love doing at Unstoppable Latina is elevating our clients' brand. Like, we want you to stop being the best kept secret and let's take you to industry icon. Like, because that's what my clients tell me all the time. I'm like, feel like the best kept secret. No, mija, not anymore with me. So please, if you want to learn more about our brand elevation services, visit our website at unstoppablelatina.com. But other than that, I love sharing my knowledge. I love sharing my superpoderes, and I love sharing resources, tools, grants with every Latina entrepreneur, whether they're right to work with us on Unstoppable Latina or not. So I share content daily on LinkedIn, which is, I know it's the boring platform, but it's the one that makes me money and I'm where my clients hang out. And so you can follow me as Paulette Pinero on LinkedIn. I share content daily. I share grants and I share a lot of opportunities around growing your brand and multicultural marketing. You can also connect with me on Instagram at unstoppable_Latina. I share similar content to what I share on LinkedIn, but it's more about learning and connecting with me as an individual, because like I said before, the best content is showing people what's possible. And I want to share how my messy ADHD driven life is possible and chronic illness life is that you can still have a successful business even when your life is not picture perfect like when most people want to show.
You have a podcast as well, correct?
I'm relaunching a podcast, the Unstoppable Latina Show. Used to have a podcast with one of my partners, Nikki Lidermoz, but Giovanna took that podcast and is sharing stories. So I love to support her. I'm with her every season. But I'm launching my new podcast on the Unstoppable Latina Show that is starting next month. And I'm very excited because I'm going to be sharing every Monday exactly all the news and all the shit in business and marketing that you need to know before you start your week. So when I envision my Diana listening to my podcast, she's preparing for the week. She's like, cuéntame el business chisme, Paulette, so I can prepare and apply for these grants and know all the trends. So it's going to be a short podcast every Monday, and we start the first week of March.
That is so exciting, and I cannot wait to tune in. We're going to put all of the links in the episode show notes, so if you want to learn more about Paulette and the work that she's doing, please go ahead and support. Can I just say, you are such a refreshing presence in this digital business, online business space. There's just so many people who are just completely full of shit, to be honest. And you're definitely not one of those people. So thank you for operating from a place of integrity. It is appreciated and it is so needed in this space where we continue to be underrepresented. But hopefully, you know, part of the work that we're doing is going to shift that. So thank you so much for being here.
Thank you for inviting me. I love the show and I always love talking to you.
Thank you so much.
If you thought the only way to get a more defined jawline with natural-looking results was through surgery, think again. Juvederm Volux XC is a non-surgical injectable gel filler that improves moderate to severe loss of jawline definition and can help you achieve natural-looking results with little downtime. Even better, this improved definition lasts up to 1 year with optimal treatment. No maintenance required. Improve jawline definition for a smooth, sculpted look with Juvederm Volux XC. For important safety information and to find a licensed specialist, visit Juvederm.com. That's Juvederm.com. Not for people with severe allergic reactions, allergies to lidocaine, or the proteins used in Juvederm. Common side effects include injection site redness, swelling, pain, tenderness, firmness, lumps, bumps, bruising, discoloration, or itching. There's a risk of unintentional injection into a blood vessel, which can cause vision abnormalities, blindness, stroke, temporary scabs, or scarring. Talk to a licensed specialist to find out if it's right for you.
Thanks for listening to today's episode. If you are ready to take your dinero to the next level, sign up for our free 14-page guide, The Financially Lit Latina, the ultimate blueprint for becoming poderosa with your dinero. This 14-page guide includes our best tips on money mindset, budgeting, debt repayment, career, investing, financial independence, side hustles, and more. And you can get it completely free. So to get your copy of The Financially Lit Latina, just head over to YoQuieroDineroPodcast.com/start and start transforming your dinero story today. Until next time, stay empowered, stay inspired, and stay poderosa. On the Yo Quiero Dinero podcast and associated entities, all information provided is for general information purposes only and does not constitute accounting, legal, tax, or other professional advice. Listeners should not act upon the content or information found here without first seeking appropriate advice from an accountant, financial planner, lawyer, or other professional. We assume no responsibility for information contained on this podcast and associated entities and disclaim all liability with respect to such information, including but not limited to any liability for errors, inaccuracies, omissions, or misleading or defamatory statements. Usage of this podcast and associated contents constitutes an explicit understanding and acceptance of the terms of this disclaimer.